What are you looking at right now in terms of options with Senga?
Yeah, I mean, everything's on the table, you know, whether he makes the next start, you know, there's a lot going on right now, and, you know, we just got to wait and see after we get through today.
Do you think he's receptive to the idea of the minors, or is it something that's kind of distasteful?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Obviously, we all know he's going to have to give us consent if that's the case, but, yeah, again, wait till we get through today, and then we'll go from there.
Do you think there's anything to the mental side of the guy that comes to New York, pitching in New York for the first time?
I wouldn't say in New York. You know, like, this guy is a closer. Closers, especially when you're that good, you know, for him. I mean, I think it's just, if anything, it's just the struggles, you know. But whether it's New York, San Luis, whatever the case might be, big league players are going to go through stretches where it's hard. But I wouldn't put it on, like, New York. These guys built for it. So.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the tipping, but just pure execution-wise, how are you feeling you're executing your stuff right now?
Yeah, I would say it's been okay. It could probably be a little better, you know. You know, it feels like guys are swinging at 100 like it's 91 right now. So it's, you know, when you feel like you got to be perfect out there, it's not a good thing. So just trying to get back to the basics and start at square one, you know, and, you know, try to get back to form and, you know, be myself and help the team win.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, September the 4th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. We now have a chat, great interaction over there. Free subscribers are welcome. You want to get some premium content, great. Come on over to the newsletter, Talking Mets Beyond the Mic. There's always something for you, and you get bonus coverage, and you get to interact with the show pretty much all week. What better way to spend your time watching the Mets than that? So anyway, Mets coming off 2 out of 3 here in Detroit, coming to you on this day off, rare midweek edition of the show. Thought it was important to come to you, kind of set up the weekend, a big week and a chance for the Mets to really put the hammer down on the Reds. And you thought you'd be feeling pretty good. Mets took 2 out of 3 in Detroit. Tough game they won on Labor Day. Blow the doors off of them. Game 2. Yeah, I know you want to go for the jugular. You want to go for the sweep. Clay Holmes on the mound. More of the same. And I think that's what really brought on. And I was planning on doing a show, but maybe a little bit of a series setup. But this is a different type of show because yesterday really illuminated the challenge the Mets have. Everything you saw in Game 3, everything you saw in that ball game is probably what keeps you up at night about the rest of the season. Now, to set the stage here, the Mets have a 5-game lead. The Reds obviously are the team we've been watching for the last month or so. And the thought here is get and the Mets actually got it to a decent 5-game spread here. Toronto also, you know, taking 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati, basically a slow pitch softball over there. And you figure, okay, you got a little bit of a comfortable cushion here. Even if you lose 2 out of 3, you come out of there with a 4-game lead. But the Giants all of a sudden decided to jump into the party here. And that, I think, is the beauty of the wild card where, and it's also almost a curse. So here you have the trade deadline on the 31st, and the Giants were sellers. They sold to the Mets. And now they're zooming right back into the race. So you're always in this hybrid buyer-seller mode. And with the wild card and with how baseball really has become in almost like a game of streaks, within 10 days, they pick up 3 games on the Mets. And now they're 4 games out. They're ahead of the Reds in the wild card. They've got some games with the Rockies down the stretch. Yeah, they're playing the Dodgers. Their schedule's not too gnarly. And you have to start to say, hey, you know, with the Giants being hot, can they stay hot? Another team now putting pressure on the Mets. and making this wild card, which is still a comfortable lead, but not safe. And normally with, 22 games left to play, the Mets have played 140 games, five games up. You never want to say it's over because we've seen too much in baseball. We've seen too much in this town. But what really concerned you about the Mets was on display yesterday. And the fact that here on an off day, and this is what I really think concerns you about, not the long-term direction of the club. What you've seen from McClain and potentially with Tong and some of the reports you're getting on the offensive and pitching side for the minors, the Mets have a lot of good options that make them an attractive team for the fan base in the very near and going forward position. So that's not what today's about. It's about 2025, making the postseason. And I don't even want to get into their viability in a short series against the Dodgers or the Padres or Milwaukee. I'm not going to get into that because that's a tournament. Those are different conversations. Those are matchup-based conversations. It's surviving what really should be a comfortable wild card lead. It's surviving that and making it to the tournament, which now I think, even with this five-game lead over Cincy, four-game lead over the Giants, what you saw yesterday is what's keeping us up at night. And at this time of the year, where a couple of things. A, you're going to have starters, I think, every time around the order not get through the fifth inning. I mean, this is just happening consistently. And, you know, whether it be matchups, pitch count, productivity, whatever, fatigue, that's just the reality. And that's not a good thing because it burns out a bullpen. Even in a time of the year where you have 14 arms coming out of that roster, you have an extra arm that you don't have to shuttle to just get. You're still going to probably shuttle, but you have that luxury, and that still concerns you. But what also concerns you is that when you went into the deadline and addressed a really big need, which was the bullpen, which was the chemistry experiment that Stearns got away with playing last year, played it again this year, injuries cropped up and made it a little bit, to be fair to him, made it a little bit more difficult, big injuries like Minter. And you go out and you have what everybody said, a great deadline. You brought in a second closer, an elite closer, a guy that's been at the top of the sport at times right there with Diaz. You got some good setup arms. And look, Soto and Rodgers have been good. I know everybody's picking on Rodgers, but Rodgers, who's not sexy, and that's the part. He doesn't throw up pinball numbers with strikeouts. He just goes out there, throws strikes. There's a lot of contact. You got to make plays behind him. He's given up a little bit, few too many hits. But Rodgers has been good. He's just not sexy, and I think that's where some people think he's not doing well. But the real key was pushing guys like Reed Garrett, Ryan Stanek, you know, having rarely come in and maybe not be as high leverage that quickly, or maybe make him more of a early higher leverage option. Because you had Ryan Helsley, and then you said, look, if Diaz needs a day off, you've got Helsley. There's no need, really, for the most part, for Diaz to go multiple innings because you've got Helsley. And again yesterday, you bring Helsley in, and he can't perform. And you're at a point now with Helsley where you don't think he's, I don't think he's going to perform this year. And I look, I read all the things, his tipping, you know, he's working on this, you know, Mendoza's supporting him publicly. You know, Helsley wants to say he's seeing positives out of the outing. You know, whatever cliches anybody wants to give, I don't care. You know, that's public consumption. You want to say that it's not taking accountability, it's not holding him accountable, that's a whole different conversation. We're in a different era of media. We talk about that all the time. We don't know how those conversations are going on behind closed doors. And by the way, Mendoza over the last, you know, week to 10 days has actually been easing him more into blowouts than putting him in close games. And yesterday being down, it's a game that was there. It's a game that you want to have an opportunity with a one-run deficit to maybe make some noise in the ninth inning. So I'm not saying it wasn't a high-leverage situation, but it wasn't a painful, hey, you're up two runs, eighth inning, you just need to close the door with six outs, and you just gave it away. So you started to ease him into the lower of the higher-leverage situations, and he couldn't get the job done. And it doesn't really surprise me because in these blowouts, he hasn't looked great. Other than maybe the first one or two outings, Helsley hasn't looked great at all since being here. Now, why? That's a whole different thing. But here's the dilemma, and here's where, as good as you're feeling about the offense now, and with Alvarez coming back and how everybody's clicking, and when you look at the total numbers of the offense, you look at a team that has been streaky and has had extreme performances, but if this is where everybody lands, forget about the streakiness of the kids or the overall streakiness of the club and all the things that happen. That's another conversation for another day. If you go up and down the baseball reference page and see all the hitters up and down a lineup, not everybody's having career years, by the way. It's a very solid offense, and it's an offense that has all the components of what we thought going into the season. They could average 5 runs a game. They're doing well more than that since the beginning of August, but they're almost there overall. It's got length. You know, it's got all the type of things you want. It could be a bully offense. It could be an offense that puts some pressure on the pitchers. I think they're hitting situationally, especially with runners in scoring position, better. Maybe that's could improve a tick at times, but maybe we're quibbling a little bit. It's got all the makings of the offense that over the last few years, you shouldn't see the brownouts that you saw even as during the 100-win 2022 season. So you figured that out. But now you've got a much bigger problem, and a problem that really derailed the Mets. If you go back and you want to make a comparison to what keeps you up at night, especially for Mets fans that have been around a while, there's a lot of that 2007 Mets feeling to this club down the stretch. And what I mean by that is that was a team that had a lot of offense that was firing on all cylinders at the end of 07. And when you talk about the collapse against the Phillies, that collapse was a starting pitching collapse. That collapse was a bullpen collapse. That collapse was a pitching collapse. And some of the things, bad bullpen, not getting length out of starters, was present during that last, you know, especially the last 2 weeks of the season. And what the Mets have as the challenge right now, going into a series with Cincinnati, not necessarily knowing what Sunday is going to bring in terms of starter. I have some theories on that. None of it's, you know, sourced. It's just theories. Not having your second closer, elite setup guy, right, and probably going to have to bench him, and you're probably not going to bring him in to a tight game this week unless you actually absolutely have to. And now, after all the moves you made at the deadline, you're still in a spot where you've got some core guys. You've got Diaz. You've got Soto. You have to keep Soto against lefties. You've got Raley. You've got Rogers. You've got those four guys that can navigate the last, you know, 9, probably 12 outs of the ball game. Maybe you sprinkle in. I mean, you have been sprinkling in a Stanek, which makes you very, very nervous. Makes me nervous. I know that. But you really can't, on the days where you're behind, you really can't trust anybody. And if you have a big lead, maybe you're going to a Hergert. Hageman came in yesterday, and that's an interesting arm, and I'll get to that in a minute. You got some guys, you know, you've had the scrap heap guys that you've been bringing up, the Waddells and Davinskys, and maybe you have to revisit some of that. But outside of those four core guys, whether you're up by 10 runs, down by 10 runs, or somewhere in between, you can't trust anybody. And it gets ugly and it gets quick. And with the starters, potentially, you've seen it with Senga. You saw it with Peterson over the weekend. I mean, Holmes battled, but he couldn't get through 5. I mean, Holmes wasn't bad. And I think Holmes' season, which hasn't been bad, maybe not as good as what we thought when we saw him early in spring training, but because of the struggles of the rest of the rotation, a guy that was a closer a year ago and is producing at the level where, you know, he's 10% above league average. He's giving you basically, you know, 5 innings, 2 runs on a consistent basis. He's won double digits in games, and he's almost at 150 innings. I mean, if you go up and down a lot of pitchers throughout the sport, you know, that made a transition out of the bullpen and who he was a year ago, that's not bad. I mean, he's not a bad back end of the rotation starter. Now, you could argue, and you're probably going to think about needing him out of the bullpen in the postseason. They're not going there right now. They're not going there right now. So you got this thing where on a given night, you could have a starter not go deep. The starters implode quick. You've seen it even with Manaea. And then you have the bad bullpen situation. You have all the recipes of a team that could break your heart on a given night, could get their doors blown off. And the ripple effect is when you have these games where you burn the bullpen, it ripples into the next game and maybe the game after that where you don't have availability and the depth isn't there. And it all goes back to the main piece of the deadline that you gave up 3 pretty good prospects for. You know, can't get anybody out in any situation. It doesn't matter what part of the lineup. It doesn't matter the score. And nobody really seems to have an answer. Well, they think they have an answer. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And I made a joke about Mel Rojas. And for the fans that don't know Mel Rojas, you know, he wasn't Ryan Helsley when the Mets acquired him from the Cubs. But he was a guy that, going into the 97 season when they acquired him, was coming off a 36-save season. And, you know, he was a very good, a top-notch closer. And he struggled with the Cubs, and the Cubs traded him to the Mets. He needed bullpen help. They threw a guy by the name of Turk Wendell in that deal. Rojas wasn't terrible in 97, but coming into 98, you figured, all right, you got another year of control there. They actually had a couple of years of control, and he was awful. He had an ERA over 6. His strikeout rate plummeted by 35-40%. And by the end of the year, Bobby Valentine, I think the last 3 weeks of the season, didn't even use him. He was essentially benched. It was the first time and really the only time in my baseball life that I saw a player be benched, similar to like a player at the end of the bench in an NBA game where they couldn't trust them. And it, you know, I think, and I'm actually going and bringing up the logs here because it's not, Helsley's not there yet, but I got to tell you, you're trending. On September the 8th, he gave up 4 runs in 2 innings in a blowout loss to the Phillies. And, you know, that's, you know, over the course of, you know, maybe, you know, 10 days, he'd given up 15 or 16 runs in about 5 or 6 innings. Not that much different than Helsley. And Valentine had enough and he just benched them. So there's some similarities. And the problem here is the Mets don't necessarily have a Turk Wendell to go to if the Mel Rojas is bad. Or do they? So you get kept up late here thinking about this. And if you told me today, would I be shocked at a situation where the Mets play okay down the stretch, but don't have enough to go on any kind of extended winning streak to really put the hammer down on San Francisco and Cincinnati? And if one of these guys gets hot, like San Francisco did the last 10 days, they were 9-1 down the stretch, particularly the last week, yeah, I could see the Mets get nipped. Now, Mets won 6 out of the last 10. They're playing 600 baseball. That's not bad. They got 22 games left. They play 600 baseball. You're looking at about 88 wins. Now, I said 90 was the golden number. I don't know if 90 is achievable. It's certainly not achievable with all the components of the pitching that are out there. The offense will do their trick. Maybe they'll have games like yesterday where, and they still do it at times, like that's the execution with runners in scoring position or runners on third and less than 2 outs, where there's a little bit more swing and miss and not as much possible situational hitting. Again, you're not going to change a team that I think is more of a hard hit line drive team, not looking to maybe dink and dunk the ball around the ballpark. That's not necessarily the kind of hitters they have there, other than McNeil, maybe Nimmo. Maybe throw Beatty in there. But you cannot feel good down the stretch with the big clouds over the head here of the short starts and the kerosene on the fire setup situation in the bullpen. And if you don't get those 4 guys to perform, I mean, God forbid Diaz has a bad game and you lose that game, you know, you can't afford to blow any saves down the stretch. You really can't afford to lose any games where those guys are your bridge to Diaz and you have the lead. You can't. And I hate to say it, the other night they're up by 10 runs, 9th inning, Hurgert, and he gave up a couple of runs. And I know they were trying to push him a little bit probably further than he, you know, bullpen arm should in this day and age. You don't necessarily feel comfortable. And not that that was getting close, but how many times over the last month a 10-run lead has become a 5 or 6-run lead, and you're looking at a couple of runners on base, you're like, another runner, this thing gets interesting. It's happened more than you probably want to admit. So what do the Mets do here now? First, I'll give you my theory on Sunday. You have Peterson, and then you got Tong this weekend. And I think that's the right move. You know, Peterson's the veteran. Peterson can give you innings. He starts the big series off, and you take a little bit of pressure off of Tong. But Tong's got a ton of pressure on him. He's on the road, playoff-bound team. I mean, it's a great test for the kid after a weird debut against a bad team at Citi Field where they scored a billion runs and he had to sit on the bench. But this is going to really show the chops. You know, all the chops that McClain has shown time and time again in the short time he's been in the big leagues. Now it's Tong's first opportunity to show that. And then you got the question mark on Sunday. Now, it's come out and it's always been there. I mean, I didn't know the parameters around the options. The Kodai Senga has options, like any other, you know, player with less than 6 years of service time and been in the league a short period of time. Now, Senga needs permission to get sent down. I personally believe that the Mets are trying to convince him to go down to Syracuse. I don't have any information. I don't think he wants to, and I have a feeling that there's some pride there. I think the optic looks bad. I think, obviously, once you accept that assignment, you're setting yourself up to be down there a little bit. You know, maybe you do like the Mets did with Steve Traxel back in the day. Hey, I'm only going to keep you down 10 days, two starts. And look, it's September 4th. 10 days brings you the last 2 weeks of the season. Maybe he comes out of the bullpen. Maybe he gets another start. Who knows? Depending on what the situation is. But I think they're trying to convince Senga to go down and take a start. Maybe they're working with him in the lab or the bullpen on the side. But at this point, you just don't have the luxury of risking a two-inning, Senga all over the place, non-competitive outing. And look, Cincinnati has been hitting the hell out of the ball. They're not a great offensive team. We saw them at Citi Field. The Mets really at that point were struggling offensively, and they couldn't get the job done and you know close the deal against their bullpen. Not a bad bullpen, but a couple of games that they probably could have come back and won. They did come back and win one. This Saturday afternoon, they didn't. But you got a team that's hitting the ball really well now against a Toronto team that doesn't have bad pitching. You know, Barrios and Bieber and guys like that didn't really get, you know, the job done here. And they have some bullpen issues with Hoffman struggling. So they put up some points last few days. So you're looking at that. You're looking at Senga. You're looking at how the Mets starters have been. I mean, here's the thing. After looking at what they did to the Blue Jays over the last few days, Cincinnati, you trust Helsley in a tight spot? You trust Senga coming in and giving you five good innings? The answer is no. So what they do on Sunday, I mean, the thought is bring back McClain, and maybe they're looking to see what that game also means. Like, they split the first two games. They want to put the Reds down, the hammer down. You go to McClain. God forbid you lose the first two games. You want to stop the bleeding. You got to go to McClain now. It's crazy. Kid was in Binghamton most of the year. Now he's your stopper. You know, now maybe if you're looking for a sweep and you've worked with Senga and you've discovered some things and you're willing to play fast and loose and maybe the bullpen isn't in too bad a shape, maybe you give him one more shot rather than Syracuse, and that might be where they're looking to be. But, you know, it's a tough situation. Like, these are not conversations that you should be having on September 4th for a team that's right now in the postseason and has aspirations of advancing in the postseason. These are not the kind of conversations. You want your roster settled. You want it to be about, can you execute? Is the other team just going to beat you? Not that you're not prepared to give the best starting situation, or you're not prepared to have, or you're figuring out your bullpen hierarchy. I mean, that's not situations you want to be in on September 4th. Really, it's a situation that really reads of a team that's not going to make it. And they're fortunate where the league has played down a little bit, but now the league is starting to play a little bit more up. San Francisco's playing up. I mean, St. Louis is kind of in the peripheral. And the problem is those things that I've talked about that are a problem in the bullpen rotation, that's why this team has reeled off at times. 8 out of 10 losses, 9 out of 10, 14 out of 18. And you have one of those stretches now? They've had two of them in the last 60 to 90 days? You're done. You're going to look up. You'll be three games out with 10 to play on the wild card. And now you have none of the destiny that you control. That's the thing. The Mets, despite everything, control their destiny. If they win every night, it doesn't matter what Cincinnati and San Francisco do. Or you want to throw St. Louis in. Now, the other part here is, are there solutions? And the solutions are risky, but there are. So you bench Helsley now, and you say to me, well, Mike, first of all, there's a lot of people that want to bench Helsley, and there are a lot of people who are angry about him coming in. You didn't give up three prospects for this guy never to pitch in a big spot. You might be there now where you can't. I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to be careful what big spot they bring him in and what the situation. Like yesterday, they had won the first two games of the series, so maybe they felt they had some house money, if there's such a thing in a wild card race. But you're not going to just completely, you know, say, hey, I'm not using you. I think they're close to that for a little bit, but I don't think they'll ever get to that point the rest of the year. I'd be shocked. And to question Mendoza, then look, there's no way on July 31st you would have questioned Mendoza doing anything of the sort with Helsley in any big spot. And after you gave up all that prospect capital, you can't just like wave the white flag, but you have to be careful. And there is a point where I personally think it's not going to happen now. I'm not waving the white flag, nor am I advocating for it, but I'm not expecting him to be very good or better. Okay? So what is the solution here? You have no Helsley in a given moment in a big spot. You have Rodgers, you have Soto, you have Raley, you have Diaz. Is there anybody else that you could go to? Now, if you go to the active roster, you still have Stanek. You don't trust him. He's been bad really all year. Hurgert was actually pretty good for a couple innings. They probably pushed him too much. He's been an interesting arm. And then you have Justin Hageman, who we really haven't talked about. Now, in totality, the booth has actually brought this up. Hageman, Davinsky, Hurgert, you know, guys like that, scrap heap guys, Rico Garcia when he was here, Jose Castillo when he was here. He's in Seattle now. They've done an excellent job piecing together, especially games where the Mets didn't have a starter in June and they were going with an opener or a bulk guy to start the game. They've actually done an excellent job. In the last 60 days, those guys have done a better job than Senga. You know, those guys have been pretty good. They did a better job than Montas. They've been actually somewhat of a saving grace in terms of at least capturing innings and saving the bullpen. Now I think you're in a spot where you have to actually say to yourself, can I go to one of these guys when we're down 3-2 or even up 3-2 early innings and ask them to get me an inning? And Hageman did that yesterday, obviously after the Helsley implosion. And I looked at Hageman and I looked at him a little bit more closely. And what's interesting about him is that, yeah, he's a scrap heap guy. And you look at the minor league numbers, he's got an ERA of 6. Forget about the minor league ERA numbers. You could have one bad outing in the minors. Maybe he's working on something. Remember, the minors is not about performing with basic statistics that you and I look at. They're looking at other things, spin rate, repertoire, sequencing, location. They're going to have you work on those things in a game. And if you're working on them and you're not necessarily pitching to, you know, the hitter's strengths or weaknesses or the score of the game, you could have wild numbers. We've talked about this with our good friend Ernie Dove about, and just because Hageman's not a top prospect, they're doing that with other guys. So forget about those numbers. If you look at Hageman, and Hageman is, you know, a very small sample size. We're talking about 21 innings. Four of those were very impressive against Atlanta in a blowout where the Mets looked like they were going to have slow pitch softball that day and blow a big lead like they did, I guess, the day after, and he put the hammer down on that. But you look at him and you start to break down who he is. Now, what's interesting about him, he's a four-pitch pitcher, cutter, sinker, changeup, slider. When he pitches the bulk innings, he relies more on his cutter and he uses the whole repertoire a little bit more. When he's in the short spurts, he's more slider heavy. And if you look at his cutter and slider, if you look at it on his arsenal graphs on Savant, they're very similar in terms of how they come off out of the hand and look to the hitter, but completely different in terms of their spin, in terms of their movement. And what's interesting about Hageman is that slider, and it's only 16 at-bats, but the opposition has struck out four times, and they got an .063 batting average against. They got one hit in 16 at-bats against that slider. Against the cutter, they got two hits in 20 at-bats. Where he gets himself in a little bit of trouble is the changeup and maybe the sinker. But and when he pitched in bulk against the Yankees, he got touched up a little bit. Aaron Judge, I think, hit a home run. That was the Subway Series, 4th of July, and all that stuff. And then, you know, in the other bulk outings, he has been okay, but he's used more of his repertoire. If you put him in a short spurt, can he be a guy, a slider cutter guy, that could get you outs, righty? Maybe he's one of these under-the-arm radar arms that the Dodgers and the Yankees get year after year and all of a sudden come out of nowhere. Remember something. Clay Holmes, who's a starter in the Mets rotation, and everybody's pining for to be a setup guy, not a Diaz, he was a no-man's land pitcher out of the Pirates organization when the Yankees acquired him, a failed starter that nobody thought was anything more than just bullpen depth. And look at what he became. He became the closer of the New York Yankees. So you never know. I think it's interesting. I think that Mendoza has to look at Hageman now. Less as a guy, let me throw him out there, do three or four innings, and yeah, I'll lose him for a couple of days or maybe shuttle him to save the bullpen too. Can he be tried in the circle of trust? I think you have no choice. Can Hurgert be that guy? I don't know. Do you want to go back to Davinsky, who I know has had good numbers, but his strikeout rate's way down? He's a largely a changeup guy. Those guys make me a little nervous. One pitch pitchers where they're just changeup make me nervous. I think that They obviously have the back-end numbers to indicate who has the best chance of success with the spin and the repertoire. But me, novice, junior pitching coach, junior baseball front office analyst, looks at Hageman's numbers in a small sample size and say, that's interesting. Then you look at his last few outings since August started. They've been really good. And again, there's been a margin of error. They've either been down or, you know, had a nice size lead like they did against Atlanta. It's not like it's been a 3-2 game, them ahead. But maybe it's time to think about that. I mean, they gave Devinsky a shot earlier in the year against Kansas City in a close game. And I know he has a resume. He was a setup man for a championship team in Houston. So it's a little bit different. But you can't burn the same guys out every day. And personally, this weekend, if you're in the sixth inning and it's a one-run game, you want to try Hageman or Stanek? Right now, I mean, maybe you go to Helsley in those situations and give him a short rope. But, I mean, why not? Now, you want to get a little crazier? Because you know who's down there. The Devinskys are down there in the minors. You got Hergert, you know, that I don't know when he's going to be available after his outing. But then you have Dylan Ross, who has been better with his command and control with the walk rate at AAA. And Dylan Ross is a righty. He's got a little bit of a funky delivery if you look at some videos. He's a guy that has been a little bit under the radar, but we've talked about him. 13th round pick in 2022 Eastern Kentucky. So he's a guy that has been a bullpen arm since the start, since he came into the Mets organization. Strikes out a ton. He struck out almost 14 per nine in his minor league career. But there's been times where he's walked the ballpark. The one year, I mean, in the Arizona Fall League, he walked, seven guys in five innings. You know, you want to bring a kid like that up, get him on the 40-man, maybe designate Stanek for assignment or figure, you know, Hergert, you could do that or whatever you want to do. Right now, you got to be careful because, you know, you lost Castillo to Seattle. Other teams that are in the race are going to need arms. And if they see somebody decent, now that you haven't been able to make any deals since the 31st, they're going to pluck them if they have room on the 40-man. So I think the Mets have to look at this and get creative. Here's the final really thought here. Sunday, you can't put Singh in there. I think Singh has got to go to the minors and work things out. I think you got to send a message to him. And I know that's got to be partly him. And I have a feeling he's giving him a hard time. I don't have any info on that, any proof. I know that a lot of you didn't like how I went about talking about Singh on Sunday's show. But quite honestly, everything just smells of that, how they're being the way they are with the secrecy. It's something that if you want to correct yourself, you would have done it already. And I think that, you know, McClain now is kind of the savior. And I understand you may want to give him an extra day and you want to pay a little, you know, maybe put him in the Philadelphia series. That'd be ideal because that would help. But you may need him on Sunday. So we'll see how that plays out. And then the bullpen, I think you just have to start taking some chances. You can't just say, hey, Ryan Stanek's been there forever. I'm going to use him because he's a veteran. He's bad. You can't wave the white flag and just assume you go, you know, to a bulk guy or let your starter hang out there longer. Hey, we'll go get him tomorrow. You're not in that position anymore. So you have to maybe think of a Hageman. You have to maybe even think about a Dylan Ross. I mean, they know whether these guys are ready. The reason Dylan Ross isn't up here is they probably aren't sure he's ready. Some of that is also a 40-man. They got to put him on the 40-man. They got to designate somebody. If he's not ready and he's bad, now you're stuck with him on the 40-man. You got to pay him. You're starting a lot of clocks. So there's a lot of other things. You have to be right. But if you're going to navigate the next 3 weeks and you're going to make the postseason, and then we'll talk about how we're going to handle or how this team is going to handle the postseason, well, that's a different conversation. That's a problem you'll worry about on September 28th before a wild card round. But Justin Hageman's a name that I think they have to start thinking about. Go to Baseball Savant. Look at the numbers. Look at the trends in the big leagues. Don't just look at his history. Don't look at last year's ERA when he wasn't in the Mets organization. Don't look at his Syracuse total numbers. Look at the things I said, the pitch shaping, the cutter, the slider. Look at what he's been doing in short spurts. Look at how he's adapted to the bulk outings versus the shorter outings. And again, small sample size, but it's interesting. Give it a shot. I know what Ryan Stanek's going to do. He's going to walk guys and throw straight fastballs and probably get hit or at least make you sweaty. If he gets through it, he's going to make you sweat and get some BABIP luck. So It will be a very interesting weekend. I know that it's going to be a stressful weekend, so buckle up. Take your day off today. Listen to a little Talking Mets. Sign up for the newsletter. And then rest. Get away from the game, maybe, for a night. Because you got a wild weekend, a big weekend. I think it's a weekend that potentially the Mets could put themselves in a little bit of a cushion and have some breathing room going into Philadelphia. Or this thing could tighten up and you could start to really wonder, how the hell are they going to navigate the next couple of weeks with pitching problems that honestly are not indicators of a successful playoff team. And I'm talking about 2025. And I'll leave you with this. Imagine if the kids weren't ready. Imagine if McLean wasn't ready. Imagine if they couldn't go to Tong. And that's another thing. You know, if Tong isn't ready and shows that he's not ready for the big leagues like McLean, you got that on the starting side a problem. Because you got veterans that are bad, like Senga. You got Manaea, who's compromised with chips in his elbow. I wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic. I'm not going to get deep into it today. And, you know, where do you go next? I mean, there's Sproat. I mean, Sproat is out there. And I mean, I didn't even bring up Sproat because he could potentially be a bullpen piece. But I think they need an up and down bullpen piece. See, Sproat's going to be a planned bullpen piggyback guy or bulk guy. They need, and this is where Hageman comes in, they need a guy they could ring the phone in the sixth inning because the starter's losing gas and say, get up and get us outs, or how the game is played. I don't think that's where they see Sproat. They don't see Sproat like the Yankees used Jabba Chamberlain in 07. They're going to plan him. Hageman is that guy. And I'd be curious, and I'd be curious after the outing yesterday, will we see him in a big spot this weekend? I guess we'll see if Mike Silva's on to something there. So anyway, I'm going to let you guys go. Thanks for tuning in on this Thursday morning. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, talkingmetsnoG, and come chat with us at the newsletter, free for everybody. You want to join and get a premium content, pay a little bit, like a cup of coffee a month, that's great too. But come on over to substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Thursday. Buckle up. Big weekend of baseball ahead. Till Sunday, take care, everybody.
For the